Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Gareth Greenaway joins me. We're going to revisit Salt Stack. We brought him on a year and a half ago, but a lot's happened since then. They're cloudy now. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Gareth Greenaway. Episode 262, recorded August 21st, 2013. Salt Stack Redux. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you as often as I can, usually weekly, the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, the projects you might not have heard of at all, the projects you may be using every day and wondered how the heck did it get made or why it became into place. And I am here once again on the 13th floor of the Howard Hughes building in roughly west end of L.A., in my nice spot that I like with my big blue Yeti once again, and I'm almost always joined by a co-host. This is no exception. Gareth Greenaway, welcome back yet again to co-host the show.
Thanks, Randall. You can't get rid of me.
I know. And what kind of a day is it for you?
It's one of those ordinary days where I happen to have been born a few years ago.
Some anniversary of that particular event.
Anniversary of an event, a world-changing event.
Yes, right. The whole world shifted 5 degrees left when that happened.
That's right.
Awesome. And where are you speaking to me from? Actually, you're probably like right on the road here.
Yeah, I'm over in Thousand Oaks, which is, I think, about an hour or so from you.
Depends on the time of day.
On the time of day. Well, I mean, yeah, an hour by how the crow flies, but maybe not by how the car drives.
Especially north up that 405, I tell you.
Yeah.
It is just a real pain, definitely. Well, enough local talk. We have a really interesting guest back, actually. We have Thomas Hatch on to talk about Salt, and Salt Stack, I guess, is more the better name of that. He was on the show in November of 2011. It was episode 181. And we talked about the basics of Salt, that Salt is a remote execution command line system to be able to execute commands on a number of hosts at the same time. And built on top of that was this idea of configuration management, that one of the commands you could say is, please update yourself according to formulas that I have provided for you. So that put it in the realm of, say, things like Chef and Puppet and CF Engine and other people we've had on the show, and actually Ansible Works, which we just had on recently, all in that category. But there's been a lot of development in Salt since the last time we brought him on the show. And in fact, in particular, around the area of cloud deployment. So while you could go back and listen to the previous show, we're going to try to recap some of that in this week's show so that we can just give you like the one-stop shopping for all three of those aspects of Salt. What do you know about Salt, Gareth?
I know it's based on Python. I know it's, as you said, it's configuration management as well as remote execution. I looked at it, I think 6 months ago, it looked interesting. I thought about like replacing an existing Puppet configuration with it. Didn't end up doing it for various reasons, but it definitely looks interesting. And along the same lines as I think where Ansible is and a lot of them are going. Very, very cool. Very cool stuff.
Great, great. Well, let's go ahead and bring on our guest, Thomas Hatch. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Very cool. Very cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
So it's an interesting story, actually. I'm at the LinkedIn offices. We scheduled this interview at a time where I thought for sure there was no way I was going to be on the road. And at the last minute, we had to fly out here for some meetings into the Bay. And thanks to the generosity of LinkedIn, they've been a fantastic Salt user for a very long time. Thanks to their last-minute generosity, we were able to actually get somewhere where we have a fast internet connection.
Awesome. That sounds awesome. Great. So like I said in the intro there, we've had you on before, but I really want to sort of cover those three major aspects of what Salt Stack is about. So why don't you give us sort of the 30,000-foot view and tell me what problem Salt is solving?
Yeah, so Originally, when we were on before, it was, in Salt time, it was a very long time ago. We were just remote execution and configuration management was extremely young. We spent most of 2012 building out the configuration management, making it a lot stronger, adding a lot of features and functionality so that it is a world-class configuration management system. But Salt itself now is being used for a lot more than just remote execution and config management. And we also started the Salt Cloud project, which I believe you've mentioned, that allows us to very seamlessly communicate with virtually any public and private cloud system that's out there today. And then on top of that, we have a number of systems inside of Salt that are being used for continuous code deployment, that are being used for complete management of systems. We have a lot of people who actually go so far as to turn off SSH in their production environments and do everything over Salt. So it's been really interesting to see the level and scope of what Salt is being used for just continue to expand.
Awesome. So let's start with each of the aspects and walk through them and what they provide. So let's talk about the remote execution thing. So what really intrigued me about this is that I had built these tools when I was doing a management of like 30 systems in one of my gigs, where I would say, run this command on all of my Sun 3 servers. That's how long ago it was. Run this command on all of my desktop Sun clients. Run this command on all of my Sun 4 machines. And it did it by SSHing into each machine. Now, Salt doesn't work that way. Can you describe how Salt actually gets past that problem of SSHing into each machine?
So Salt works differently in that what it does is we use a ZeroMQ network backend and a pub/sub interface. And what that enables us to do is execute those commands at a ridiculously higher speed. And so it's able to create this, this pub/sub interface. And we're able to send these micro commands out to these systems. And then there's a vast library of system management routines within Salt that then executes that command. And it's interesting that you bring this up. One of the things that we've worked really hard on inside of Salt is to make it as modular and flexible as possible. And so when it comes to the remote execution, we've actually now modularized that core component so that Salt can use alternative network transports for remote execution. In the next version of Salt, we are going to see SSH support added so that people can use it in environments where those directional network needs they want them to go the other way. Of course, it's nowhere near as fast or as performant or as scalable, but we've had demand for it, so we added it, and that's how we work.
Cool. So, and the way that works, as I recall, and actually I've seen it in operation, so I know it works this way, is that you have like a Salt master, and then on each individual machine, you have a Salt minion, and they stay in constant contact rather than having to start up a new connection, send a command, and then disconnect like some other systems do. How does that scale? What happens when I have like 1,000 machines I want to all connect up, or 10,000 machines? I'm sure there are some deployments of that size that Salt's gone to.
There are quite a few deployments that have gone to that size. And it's great to be here at LinkedIn. I mean, again, they've been a flagship user of Salt for a very long time, longer than I had originally thought. And they have a number of deployments where they have a single master managing many, many thousands of servers. And they come back and they've run into a couple of hiccups right when they get around the 10,000 range. And usually we've got a system called the Syndic in Salt. And this allows you to layer your masters and build master tiers. And most of our users, once they get up into the tens of thousands of servers, they end up building these Syndic layers because it helps them, if anything, just logically control where everything is. But they are able to report back that they run into the occasional hiccup, usually along the lines of the master server could use a little more RAM to deal with all the connections. But all in all, they're still able to send commands out to between 7 and 10 and 12,000 servers and get all those responses back in seconds.
Wow. One of the complaints I've actually heard about Salt, I don't mean to, you know, spring this on you, but because of the nature of ZeroMQ and the fact that maybe one of the minions isn't listening right at the moment because it's being rebooted or whatever, I've had complaints that, like, doing configuration management, you sometimes have to issue commands twice or three times to get it to really play out everywhere. Is there anything being done to address that, or is that already fixed and we just don't know about it?
Yeah, so especially in the earlier days of Salt and using Xurm Q2, it was much, much more common that we'd have Xurm Q hiccups. And we've added quite a few new components inside of Salt to make it so that it's substantially more reliable on top of that Xurm Q interface, and so that when using Xurm Q3, we don't run into these issues anywhere near the same level that we used to. We've still seen, I mean, just a few issues of what we call minion droppings. And
that's not a pretty picture.
but yeah, we've seen a few of those left over, but hardly at all anymore using Salt 0.16 and Xurm Q3.
Okay, and so let's go on to the next sort of big picture thing. I actually sort of referenced it a moment ago, which is the configuration management. Can you tell me how configuration management works within Salt, and also contrast it as best you can, say, with something like Puppet or Chef for the places that it's different?
Yeah, so configuration management in Salt is entirely data-driven instead of being language-based, and we developed this idea of more of the data-driven configuration management and the use of abstracting configuration management over again data modeling. And some of the benefits that we've seen inside of using this sort of system do have to do with the performance. The data modeling systems are extremely fast, and it's very, very easy to use. So since the underlying component of Salt is that it's all about data structures, and these data structures are layered, Salt becomes language agnostic. And so it's very easy to represent it in the default, which is YAML with Jinja templating. But also any sort of templating can be used. We ship with a Python DSL. You can use pure Python. Theoretically, we should be able to write DSLs for virtually any language that's out there. So, again, making it language agnostic. Another component about it that makes it very different than anything else that's out there is the fact that it's layered. And so it's very easy to peer into. You don't need to do this, but it's very easy to peer into the different layers inside of Salt's configuration management system, where you're able to come back and say, okay, the lower layers of Salt, we've got a simple data structure that we compile down to, and then the higher layers are very, very easily abstracted. And so, again, it allows more flexibility, allows people to deploy and manage their systems in radically different ways.
Awesome. Awesome. And how that sounds like quite a change from, like you said, ages ago in Salt time. What's been the biggest new piece that's been added to that, or maybe combination of pieces?
Oh, there have been a lot of pieces. We've done just a ton of work over the last, let's see, it's been almost 2 years since we spoke last. And we didn't have Pillar back then. We didn't have a lot of the topology components that Salt has now back then. Pillar is fantastic because it allows you to write your Salt states in such a way that you fundamentally data model how everything is going to be executed, and then just load those variables into Pillar, and they wrap on top of the states in a very, very clean way. So Pillar is a really, really important component. We've got things like the syndic that I mentioned. We've got things like Salt peer communication, the Salt mine, and the Salt returner interfaces that allow for very seamless cross-communication between minions and allow them to automatically configure themselves based on what's happening live inside of the infrastructure instead of having to rerun configurations or look things up manually or manually set where locations are. I'm trying to think of some of the more recent things that we've added. There's the overstate system inside of Salt, and there's a bunch of features coming in 0.17 that I'm really excited about. Well, and this is kind of one of the problems that you run into when you're developing a project like this. My mind is always in the next version, and I almost completely forget what I did in the past. And so, I mean, just thinking about the next version, we've got a new component in where we allow salt states themselves to be controlled and executed from the master, which gives us an extremely flexible configuration management environment from the top level. We've got a new component in that actually allows all of the states to be executed in the order in which they are defined in the SLS files. So salt is used, it's always used finite ordering in the way in which it executes. But one of these new things that's really exciting that we call state auto order just allows all of those states, again, to be evaluated in the order in which they're defined. And then if you use requisites to use things in a declarative nature, then those will override that ordering. And so it's still very, very seamless. It's declarative but can be looked at from an imperative position. And then there's things like the prereq that got added recently, which allows you to make modifications to your system based on something that you expect to happen in a future state, which makes it very easy to control systems relative to them being inside of load balancers or things of that nature. So, yeah, there's a lot. Without sitting here with the documentation and going over the vast array of what SALT has in store and what SALT is capable of doing now.
Well, thank goodness we have good show notes, and we'll be pointing people at all the detailed docs on this. I'm just trying to get kind of a hand-waving overview still. We're still in the 30,000-foot level part of the show.
I'm sorry.
That's cool. Hey, you know, it's information. People can rewind and listen to that part 4 or 5 times and figure out exactly what you said. I just want to also touch base before I let Gareth take over a few questions here. I just want to touch base also on sort of the cloudy part of this, too. What is SALT Cloud, and where is it headed?
Yeah, so SALT Cloud is really the orchestration and control layer for cloud infrastructure components. And I should also mention a component of SALT called SALT Vert. I'll mention that once we talk more about SALT Cloud. So SALT Cloud is really just connection libraries into things like Amazon AWS or OpenStack or DigitalOcean. And again, virtually all of the major cloud providers, we just added support for SoftLayer, just got put into develop, I want to say, yesterday. Hmm. So that's very new.
Is this is this the interface to LibVert then?
Okay. So SALT Cloud, sorry, an alarm just went off here.
Uh-oh.
Which kind of worries me. My luck is not with me today.
Is anybody leaving quickly?
No. If it's okay. A fire alarm, I'll just burn up and die.
Your swan song, your final show is here on Floss Weekly. That's great. What a way to go. Immortalized. Anyway, go ahead, Trey.
Okay, so yeah, SALT Cloud, it's not all through just LibVert. What it does is that it's able to abstract directly into, say, Amazon EC2, and we don't even use Bodo. We ran into a lot of problems. We first tried LibCloud, then tried Bodo, and then we decided that we're just going to write the raw HTTP to communicate. Similarly, we're using LibCloud to wrap a number of the cloud providers out there because it works better for some providers than others. We're in the process of switching over to using Nova for all of the OpenStack systems. And so, yeah, there's all of these different wrappers that are in there that, again, allow you to have a very native communication with those remote clouds.
Cool. Great. Sorry, I'm just stunned. I had a side chat that I accidentally did while I'm busy listening to you, which is never a good thing. So, yeah, we'll get back to talking more about that. How has the community changed since we last talked? I'm sure it's grown.
Oh, grown.
Yes. Okay.
It's become a very large developer community. We are well into the 500s of total contributors. Last year on GitHub named us the 8th most diverse developer community on all of GitHub for 2012.
Wow.
And since then, our community has more than doubled in size. And so that's been really exciting to see, that type of growth.
Definitely.
Going back to the cloud, the SALT Cloud discussion, How would you compare like the Salt Cloud, the work that you guys have done, to something like Canonical's Juju project?
So some of the differences between Salt Cloud and Salt and projects like Juju is really ties back into all of the abstractions inside of Salt. The fact that Salt is made to be extremely generic, it's made to be able to spin up virtual machines in the cloud, whether they're Windows or Unix or FreeBSD or whatever, and then initiate those communications. And the generic nature and the layered nature of Salt allows you to do things at a much more granular level. So it's a lot easier for instance, a great example of use case there is with Wikipedia and the fact that they use Salt for continuous code deployment. And they come back and they use a lot of these other components inside of Salt that are lower layer that allows them to do a lot of tricky stuff on their systems instead of taking it from that high level macro view like some of those other systems out there.
Okay. Going back to one of Randall's questions earlier about scalability, you said that the people are often using like Salt Masters with up around like 10,000 hosts. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to kind of divide up that work, say you wanted to kind of segment things and have like, okay, this Salt Master is responsible for this set, this one's responsible for this set based on whatever criteria, how easy is that to do?
That's very easy to do, and we've got quite a few users doing it. We have a system in place called the Syndic, and the Syndic is short for Syndicate, and you run it on one of what we call a lower-level master and have it report back up to a higher-level master. And so it's very easy to have quite a few masters that are spread across many deployments, many compartments, data centers, physical locations, and have them all then tied back into a central location. A really good example of this is how a number of the universities that are using Salt to manage their infrastructures do it. Clemson University is a great example because they have a lot of different departments in their university, and those departments subsequently have their own masters, and those departments, if they want, can therefore then be controlled directly by central IT, or they can be controlled directly by their local administrators and engineers, and then central IT still has this higher level master that's able to view things, push changes down from up above. And so it helps not only from the perspective of scale, but also from the perspective of organizing where everything is, organizing where the or what components of the infrastructure are doing what, and doing segmenting.
Okay. What is the largest deployment that you've heard of someone using SaltStack in?
There's quite a few. We've got, I just forgot the name. I'm horrible. I forget names all the time, which is bad. Very, very bad. But one of our largest deployments is a hosting provider out in Europe. And they're in the many tens of thousands. We look again at LinkedIn. LinkedIn is a very large deployment because they have Salt deployed across many internal deployments of many, many thousands of systems, which gets their total deployment size up into the many tens of thousands of servers.
Okay. One of the questions that while Randall was talking that I kind of thought about was he mentioned the concept of you have the master, and the master is kind of the source of truth for all of the minions. What happens if the master is not available? Are the minions able to continue with their processing their Salt information, or do they kind of stall out?
Okay, so if a master isn't available, Salt is made so that the minions will, if they need to continue getting information from the master, they will hold in their processes and wait for that master to come to reconnect or timeout as one option. Another option is that we recently introduced the Salt Multi-Master system. So it's very easy to set up multiple masters for your environment so that you can have three masters N number of masters that are controlling all of the minions so that you can safely have one of them back out. It's also noteworthy that if a master goes down and then it comes back up, all the minions will automatically reconnect to it and just carry on with where they were.
Oh, excellent. One of the things that you mentioned, one of the new features that, sounded really interesting was the cross-communication between minions, between hosts. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah. So one of the systems inside of Salt is called the peer system. And the peer system allows you to use the master as a broker for communication from one minion to others. And by default, obviously, it's completely locked down. So you just need to change some config settings to allow certain minions to do cross communication. But then it's very easy to embed cross communication routines inside of state files in Salt. So that while a minion is executing its routines, it can say things like, hey, I want to know where the database server is, and just execute that command live and get that information back. Or send information out that says, hey, I'm a new member of a cluster and I need to inform the head node that I'm here. And go ahead and shoot that routine out to the head node that says, add me to the cluster. And so we've got a lot of really interesting uses of the peer system right now. One that I really like is that, and this one honestly has surprised me, but where people are turning off internal DNS and using the peer system for all of the auto-discovery of where their services are, or using the peer system to auto-populate host files on all of their internal hosts. And so the Salt becomes not only the source of truth for configuration management, but the nature of how the network is being managed in general.
Oh, interesting. So could a possible use case for like the cross communication be like, say, a node is in a very bad state and it could let the other kind of nodes in a cluster know, hey, I need to be pulled out of rotation. You guys take over.
Yes, that is used quite a bit.
Okay. What's the install process like for Salt? Kind of, is there packages available, or how does someone get started using it?
So Salt now is packaged for all of the major Linux distributions and Windows. So there's a number of options that make it really easy to install Salt. So if you're running Fedora, for instance, you can just say yum install Salt. On Ubuntu systems, there's a PPA which is kept up to date with all of the Salt packages. Add the PPA, apt-get install Salt. For Red Hat systems, we're in the EPEL repository. Now, and all you need to do to set up Salt is install it and turn it on. That's it. There's no external dependencies. There's no database dependencies or anything of that nature. And so the install and setup process is really easy. And then we also have to make the setup of Salt, again, trying to make it even easier, is a project called Salt Bootstrap. And Salt Bootstrap is a born shell compatible shell script that will run on virtually any Unix-based platform and then install Salt correctly, meaning that it will install Salt using system packages, make sure those system packages can be gathered and then installed, and do it all with the execution of a single script. And this is how we use or how we deploy Salt minions using Salt Cloud, because Salt Cloud will go out, communicate with a cloud platform, tell it, okay, spin up a new system. Once that new system has spun up, then communicate back to it generally using SSH, and tell it to run Salt Bootstrap, seamlessly runs it, seeds all of the keys and authentication, so the Salt Master is automatically cleanly able to connect to that new minion and make it, again, as seamless as possible.
That Bootstrap script, is it compatible only with like Linux-based systems, or could you run it on like a BSD or OS X or even like a Windows system?
The only system that it isn't compatible with at this point is Windows. We're still working on getting the installer all taken care of. We might actually set up a different script, which is a PowerShell script specifically for Windows.
Okay. What's the most interesting kind of use case that you've seen for Salt?
Oh. We've seen a lot of really interesting use cases for Salt. I'm endlessly fascinated again by by Wikimedia's use case in using Salt for continuous code deployment and their integration with Jenkins, and because what they do is they have Jenkins sitting out on a Salt minion. And then when a build finishes, that minion uses the peer system to communicate with other targeted systems inside of the environment and tells them that the build is ready to be deployed. And then they've got an internal Redis database, which contains continuous deployment information for all of Wikimedia. And so then they use Salt's returner interface to take the information about that deployment and then redirect it back into a Redis database. And so they're able to use Salt really as the communication and management bus and then tie it very seamlessly into the systems that they already have. Let's see. I mentioned some of the uses with respect to DNS and some of those situations. We've got quite a few situations where people are using Salt also for direct cloud management, which is really exciting. One of the pieces inside of Salt is called CloudVert, and it ships with Salt. It's a very lightweight component, but allows for cloud management of virtual machines using Salt's remote execution bus. And so it makes it very easy to be able to run these Salt Vert routines to say, hey, I want you to spin up this kind of virtual machine on this system. It spins it up. It automatically connects it back to the Salt Master and optionally also runs full deployment on it. The Salt Vert system is currently built or was originally built on top of LibVert and KVM, but has also been extended to support KVM on SmartOS and Xen and... Oh, there was another one that was just added. Again, names, they escaped me. It's very embarrassing. But it supports quite a few hypervisors at this point. And so that's a really interesting use case that we're seeing more of, is people using using it to control what we would generally refer to as lightweight clouds.
That's all fascinating stuff. How does it handle the idea of like a fleet of servers? Like if you have, you know, one EC2 instance or whatever that has to be the database, and then a bunch of API servers and maybe a bunch of middleware servers. How does it handle the communication to get the configuration files right in all of the associated runway of systems?
So we've got a lot of options as to how you can go about doing that. And that really ties back into the fact that we've seen so many different deployments, and frankly, they're all just different. And so one of the things that that we run into is that traditionally you would just match systems based on their host name or their ID name instead of Salt. So you would name them web one or database one or things of that nature. But also Salt ships with a number of components that can be used to assign values and roles to systems so that their names can remain completely arbitrary. And this is something that we see a lot more use of inside of Amazon and EC2, for instance, because of the arbitrary nature of the naming scheme. And so generally people will use things like grains to set values on their remote systems. And so Salt comes with the grains system, which was originally designed to just report back on information about what Salt is or what information about the platform that the minion's running on. But also we can statically assign those grains so that we can create arbitrary roles and then target systems based on what those grains are. And so there's a concept of grains where you have minion side data, and then there's the concept of pillar where you have master side data that's there that's then assigned to those minions. And so you can use pillar data also to target and organize what minions are going to be doing what. Or you can use network subnets now. That was added, I want to say 5 or 6 months ago, somewhere in the realm of Salt 0.13. Wow. So there's a lot of options as to how you can partition and assign different servers to work in the scope of specific roles.
Do you know of customers that are using this from, say, some sort of monitoring system like Nagios and using it to dynamically reconfigure their systems based on that?
Actually, there's something really exciting going on with respect to this. We've been in contact with a group over associated with Amazon, and they're in the process, because they really like the way that Salt's monitoring capabilities work with respect to the fact that we can have high granularity of information being sent from the minions back into the master at breakneck speed and arbitrary information being sent back. And so they're in the process of building up a demo and putting a white paper together of over 90,000 Amazon instances. And we're really excited to see how this works, because it's going to be a pretty substantial scale for us to work with. And again, what they're doing is sending all of this information back to the Salt Master. Another thing that inside of Salt with respect to monitoring is something called the reactor system. And Salt fires events whenever it does things, and then the reactor system listens to those events and then can make reactive decisions to say, oh, well, event such and such happened, so I need to go inform another component of the infrastructure that this has occurred. And so one of the things that this group is considering right now is putting a storm server in between all of these events that are being fired to create aggregate decisions across extremely large deployments, so that more advanced decisions can be made within that construct of monitoring, and then feed that back into Salt's reactor, and allow Salt's reactor to then execute on that decision-making process.
It's really interesting. It sounds like a lot of things came out of your decision to use ZeroMQ sort of as the basis of your fabric to get started with, and something that obviously the Puppet and the Chef people and to a lesser extent CF Engine people didn't have access to. Do you think that's been part of the catalyst for why all these new layers are getting added on top of Salt?
Oh, I think that very much so, because when I started writing Salt, the central goal was high-speed remote execution. And the benefits that we've gotten out of ZeroMQ have been fantastic. And we've definitely had to wade through some trouble using it. It's very next generation with respect to how it's built and what the capabilities of Salt are. But so the benefits that we've seen from doing that have really been astronomical. They've opened up just a ton of capabilities and different views and mindsets about how to manage infrastructures. I mean, one of the common things that we run into is that people will say, oh, I'm going to replace my existing config management system with Salt because I like it, it's easier, and things like that. And then actually Hulu is a great example of this, because they've been switching over to Salt from one of the other major players. And they've come back and they said, well, we started by just rewriting all of our recipes in Salt. And then we realized that, no, we can do all sorts of other things with respect to management that we just didn't have access to before. And so they ended up re-architecting the very nature of how they manage their infrastructure because, again, of these capabilities. And a lot of it really does come back to ZeroMQ. It's that was a risky decision, I'll admit, when I took it, but it's brought us huge amounts of benefit with respect to the total capabilities of the platform.
One of the things that happened as a result, actually just shortly after I interviewed you last time, is that you moved the wire protocol from being the Python pickle format to the universal format that's accepted by many different languages. Has that allowed you to do any other language minion type things? Has that enabled anything new?
We haven't really seen demand for it, which I'm going to say I'm a little surprised about. We've got, now it uses Message Pack, and Message Pack has been fantastic because it's so darn fast, and it's so much more compact than anything else that's out there. But yeah, we haven't seen a lot of demand for writing the minion in a different language. On the other hand, what we have seen is that Salt now, and this is something newer than our last conversation, is that Salt has this concept of an event bus that runs on the master and the minion. And we allow other programs, if they have sufficient privileges, to hook into that event bus. And it's firing those events using Message Pack. And so in those situations, we've seen people write in virtually all programming languages, interfaces that are binding to that event bus, ingesting events, and then sending that into other applications. And so the ability to, with Message Pack, to create those really seamless message bindings into virtually any other language has been where we've seen most of the benefit there.
Awesome. And is that connected in through, again, a ZeroMQ socket? And what type is it?
Oh, yeah. So that's the event bus works by setting up a ZeroMQ pub Unix socket. Well, and in the case of a Windows minion, we have to use a network socket, of course. But it's a ZeroMQ pub socket, and then you create a ZeroMQ sub connection onto that socket, and then you can freely ingest all of the events that are passing through the Salt system and then reuse them in a third-party application.
Can you also inject events the other direction? Is there the reverse as well?
Yes. Salt does allow you to inject events. Again, it's there's privileges around it, making it so that you've got to, not just anybody can be injecting events.
But you can
inject events directly into the event bus and have them get fired, and then configure Salt's reactor to listen to them or things of that nature, or even use the event bus as a completely third-party communication layer for other pieces of software.
And to the degree that you can talk about it, how has saltstack.com been doing, the company that you built around this?
Oh, SaltStack has been doing extremely well. We've received quite a few awards this year. So, for instance, we got the GigaOM Investors Choice Award just a few months ago, which is really a big deal. We're excited about that. We have released SaltStack Enterprise. Now, one of the goals of Salt, before I talk into productization, is to make it extremely clear that SaltStack is intended not to be an open core company. SaltStack Enterprise is just the branch of Salt that we offer commercial support on. And we have quite a few customers now. We only turned that offering on a couple of months ago. And we've already gained over 20 paying customers in a very short window of time, which, again, is really exciting. Mm-hmm. And the pace in which these inquiries is coming in is at breakneck speed. And then with respect to investment, everything in SaltStack investment-wise has been from private investors, which has been very beneficial. But we are continually being contacted by VCs, and we're going down the path of trying to figure out what the best approach is for us to take that next round. But yeah, as a company, things are going very well. We've got just around 20 employees now. We've got a lot of engineers on staff. We're in the process of continually growing. We're hiring right now. Heck, we're always hiring. But things are going really well. It's been a really exciting ride so far.
And how is the division of core contributors to SaltStack divvied up between the actual employees versus the community?
So this is really interesting because we've got quite a few core contributors, and really we divvy up the control by giving certain individuals direct commit access to the project, mm-hmm. or to external projects. So, for instance, some of our core contributors have direct commit access to the SaltStack formulas organization on GitHub, where we have quite a few pre-baked Salt formulas available. But they don't have access to, per se, to the Salt Core repository, and they're guys who have access to the Salt Cloud repository. Every repository or component of Salt has its own manager. So I manage the Salt project itself. Joseph Hall or Tech Hat manages Salt Cloud, and Joseph is an employee, and Seth House manages the SaltStack Formulas organization. He's an employee, but then we've got guys like Pedro Alonso, who is Sound Tech online, and he's not an employee yet. We're working on that. and he manages the Salt Bootstrap project. And then we've got guys like Alec Kumjin, who started the Salty Vagrant plugin. And he's not an employee. And he manages that project, which is under the SaltStack organization. So it's really about the right people for the right task. And again, we're infinitely grateful to the fantastic community we have. And we've got quite a few core contributors who are very heavy contributors in the project.
It's probably just a coincidence, but you said Joseph Hall, and I'm wondering if it's the Joseph Hall I know. I don't know if he played a lot with Perl earlier in the years, but it would have to be somebody's Python now, but obviously. Do you know if it's the same Joseph?
It could very well be the same Joseph. He does hold you in high regard. Next time I bump into you, I need to make sure that I get he's got copies of your books, of course, and he wants them signed.
Oh, no. Well, he and I wrote books together, so this isn't like...
is a different one then.
Okay, great. That's fine. Yeah, name collision. You know, whether we only have so many names, something has to be reused a little bit very often.
That's right. The human namespace was not built for for the numbers
internet.
That hits.
Right. Not built for the internet. We're not all UUIDs. But imagine right. pronouncing somebody as a UID. That would be really hard. We're just about out of time, so I want to make sure I cover a couple more things that are pretty interesting here. You have sprints that happen all the time, and you just finished one, and what were the big things that came out of it?
Oh, heavens, I should have mentioned this sooner because you were involved in helping us get that first sprint going, and mm-hmm. we're endlessly grateful for that. Thank you. That was before we were able to open the doors for the company. But yeah, we had the second Great Salt Sprint just a few months ago, and we had 12 locations around the world. Logi Lab in Paris, Automation Logic in London, HP Cloud Services in Seattle, Hulu and WireDrive hosted locations. We obviously had one here in Salt Lake. So it was a big deal. Columbia University. And we saw, how many commits did we see on that day? But it was close to 1,000 commits.
Wow.
In Salt and in the Salt formulas. It was just a huge success. And we're already in the process of planning our next sprint. We'd like to be doing 3 of them a year. It might turn out to be 2. And then, of course, we're looking at SaltConf, which we're going to be announcing pretty soon. We're hoping to get that happening early next year.
Awesome. Yeah, I was just going to ask, is that your first conf? Or I know you've had a lot of presence at like DevOp Days and things like that all over the country and probably all over the world. But is this your first conference?
This is going to be our first full-blown conference. We've had a ton of events, and we've had a ton of hack days. And again, I'm at LinkedIn. We had a great LinkedIn event about 3 months ago here. So we're really excited to have this conference rolling out.
Uh-oh.
Sorry, I clicked the wrong button there. Thought it was on mute, but I wasn't on mute, and then I was on mute. So just a quick question, curiosity. What inspired the name for the project, like SALT?
Well, one of the core concepts behind SALT is that it's a building block, and that the software itself is meant to be a building block that allows you to solve whatever problems you need to solve with respect to infrastructure management. And so the name SALT came from the idea of a chemical and building block of life. I'll admit there are other influencers there, and some of that concept has evolved with respect to the name. But that's really the core meaning there, is that it's meant to be a building block. It's actually funny. Randall asked me last time I was on if the name SALT came from the fact that I live in Salt Lake City. And I remember looking puzzled and saying, I hadn't thought about that. So, yeah, it's more to do with this building block concept.
Okay. It's funny. I had the same thought when you were mentioning, you mentioned Salt Lake City, and I was like, I wonder if, but I guess not.
It's convenient, but not intentional.
Yeah. What future features would you like to see? What directions would you like to see Salt going in?
There's a lot going on right now with respect to future features. I mentioned SaltVert, and we really want to fill that out. It's an amazingly simple way to handle cloud. I mean, it's nowhere near as powerful as something like an OpenStack. We love the OpenStack guys, and we work a lot with them. But we'd like to see more features with respect to that cloud management. There are a number of things with respect to the monitoring layers and systems that we're interested in filling out. And also I mentioned the concept of abstracting Salt with respect to its network protocols. And so the ability to have, this is something that I'm excited about, that we're going to be filling out a lot in the future. And that is that... there's a new concept in Salt called Salt Thin that allows you to just drop the libraries and engine for the config management and execution systems without any of the communication dependencies on a system, and then run it and then attach that subcomponent into virtually any communication layer. And so that's something that we're going to be seeing coming through. And that's again where our new Salt SSH support is built around. Let's see. The other thing is that our web UI is under heavy development. One thing I'm really proud about with our web UI is the fact that it's open source. Again, we don't want to create a bunch of proprietary projects around Salt. We want to keep things out in the open, make it so that we get more users in the end. I mean, that's the goal. And so the UI is going to be just fantastic. There have been UIs built around Salt, but Salt's UI that we're putting together is incredibly event-driven. It's asynchronously event-driven like Salt is, and is going to be showing these dynamic updates of what's going on in the infrastructure in a very seamless way. We actually brought in an incredibly intelligent individual, someone with a PhD and a background in autonomous systems, is the one heading up that development. And so we're really excited to see where the UI is going. And some of the things that you're going to be seeing in that in just the next few months is just going to be just amazing.
That's awesome. So I have one final question, and it's a question and a plug at the same time. Will we be seeing Salt's stack at scale 12?
Oh yes. Oh, good man. I have to say that Scale is far and away one of our favorite conferences. Not only is it highly targeted to our users, but it is really well put together. We love going to Scale. Scale was the first conference that Salt was at. I'm very grateful for the free booth that we got that first year, long before we had a company in place, just a few months after the first interview, again on Floss Weekly. And we've got, we have every intention to be a big sponsor of Scale. We got to make sure that happens. That, again, awesome. Just love that conference.
Awesome.
So that was the ringer question, obviously. That was the simultaneous plug and end question. Yes, definitely cool. And the sucking up you did to me too was not totally unseen. So yes, it was good. I can really see now. We're just about out of time, so I really got to wrap this up. I can see now though why you were very insistent on. Yes, there are some new things we can talk about Salt after the last interview. It's seeming more and more like a game changer. I really like the fact that this has gone way beyond more than configuration management. And especially I like how you're integrating all the cloudy stuff and the monitoring stuff and the pure communication and abstracting out the other things. I actually, as of the last show, I installed Salt on the 5 servers that I manage for my client InsightCruises.com. And I never did anything with them except an occasional remote execution of uptime. So that's as far as I got last time. But I'm a lot more excited about it this time. And we'll probably figure out ways to get more things going on. Like I said, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we haven't covered that you wanted to make sure our audience is aware of this time around?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we talked about SaltConf. We talked about some of the things that are coming up. You know, if there are people out there listening and they want to join the Salt community, we strive to be an incredibly friendly place. We want to see you come and get involved with the project. We just love the community. I cannot. You mentioned sucking up, but I am endlessly grateful for everything that's going on around Salt, and if I can just continually thank everybody who's been involved and what they've done and the ideas that they've brought to the project and the work and the support that we've seen. I just can't express enough gratitude for everything that people have done around the project and how wonderful it's been to have such a fantastic, positive, uplifting community that's grown and cultivated and has really made Salt what it is.
Yes, I've just been sitting actually on the SALT IRC channel, which is an incredible resource, very much real-time information, and I understand some of your employees are actually hanging out there from time to time. And it was funny because there was a question that went by. I said, well, Thomas probably can't answer that right now. He's doing an interview. So I thought it was pretty funny in the SALT channel. So yeah, very cool. Well, and you're being the perfect, you know, benevolent dictator for life. You seem to have a great inspiration for this. You seem to have a good head on your shoulders and giving direction about how this thing needs to go. And you've surrounded yourself with an amazing community. So it's no wonder that these kinds of things aren't happening. Did I ask you the two questions last time, that my two required questions? I can't remember. What's your favorite scripting language? I probably know that.
Well, yes, that's Python.
Yeah. Oh, well. Python is Guido indented. Yes. All right. And your text editor, your favorite text editor.
Right. I'm under the gun again because it is Vim. SALT was written in Vim on Arch Linux. You know how to tell if somebody uses Arch Linux, since we're on this topic of people's favorite tools.
Okay.
I don't tell you.
Oh. In other words, they get noisy about it. All right.
Right.
Kind of like me and my ketogenic diet. I know it's the same problem I have.
Right.
or any vegan I've ever met. But yes. Now I've just offended all my vegan audience. I'm sorry. It's not me. It'll never be. All right. Well, Thomas, it's been wonderful having you back on the show. I have a feeling if I bring you back in another year and a half, you're going to like 10 times the amount of stuff about SALT as this show. So we may have to revisit you every year and a half to see what's next. All right, Thomas, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great. That was Thomas Hatch, the Benevolent Dictator of Life for the SALT project, which has gone way beyond where I heard it was last time. And I am so happy to have had him on. Gareth, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, likewise. I thought it was simply a remote configuration, remote execution tool. But it sounds like it's gone, like you said, way beyond that. And it's just going in many more exciting directions. So I'm actually, like I said, I had tried it a few months ago, but I'm excited to try it again and see what the possibilities are.
And I was joking with you in our private chat room about how, you know, maybe SALT needs a whole day at scale. And you what was your reply?
I said they actually did. They did last year.
So SALT is growing up. SALT is getting to the place where it seems like the infrastructure management tool of choice. It sounds like lots and lots of moving parts to it and lots of really cool stuff. So great. So we've got a bunch of upcoming guests. Just to remind you, I think I said this last week, but we're not on next week. We're being preempted. So there will be no show either live or in your feed. So don't yell at me saying, where is the show for next week? Because it won't be there. We were preempted by the network, and it was also a little awkward trying to get a couple co-hosts to work for that show. But we'll be back in full force 2 weeks from now, interviewing Clockwork, which is Languages and Tools for Process Control. We were talking with Dan Lynch and his friend about Campfire Manager, which manages meetups like OggCamp, where you have like an unstructured conference or an unconference, I guess they call it, not unstructured. They're structured eventually, where people can get together and then they all decide the topics that they want to cover based on mutual interest and based on desire for talking about things they're doing new. OpenWRT, which allows you to flash the 54G, I forget who owns that, Linksys 54G with brand new software, so it can do all sorts of really cool firewalls and border services and things like that. ZoneMinder is a Linux video camera security and surveillance solution. It lets you set up things like pan and tilt controls, alarms when people enter certain areas on the video, you know, nanny cams, all sorts of great things. That's going to be really cool too. Yacy, I don't know how to pronounce that, Y-A-C-Y. It's a search engine. It's a search engine, sort of Google-like, but you can use it for your intranet without having to expose your entire infrastructure to Google to get indexes on it. But it's also available sort of as a peer search engine where you can actually wander the external internet as well as Google can, or anyway, but not as well as Google can, but in the same way that Google does by walking through all the services and stuff. And you peer with others so that you can each sort of share the responsibility for doing the walking, which sounds really cool. And finally, the last one we currently have scheduled is Wireshark, and that used to be called Ethereal. It's the wire protocol analyzer. It knows to take apart packets from all sorts of different protocols, display them to you. You can play back logs. You can create logs. You can set up alarms. It's really, really like the go-to engine for figuring out what's actually happening on your wires. I am continuing to fill in Q4. I have a few more slots left. I am for to watch that process. You can go to the spreadsheet that's linked from twit.tv/floss. You'll find the big spreadsheet there that says, "See, think your project should be on the show." And then it swallows up and says, "Hey, have the project manager email me." That is the way all these projects got on the show. And that's really the people that are on the first part of the list are the people who have done that for me. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus. I just checked. We have about 2,000 followers there now. That's really kind of cool. We can also follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter. And those are actually cross-linked. So if you just follow one or the other, it doesn't matter. We still get some information. We do have a live chat room. We took a couple questions from the live chat room today. We're normally taping at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays. But again, like there's no show next week. If you go to the spreadsheet, you can find out exactly when our shows are or aren't. You can follow me at Merlyn, M-E-R-L-Y-N, on Twitter. But more people are following me on Google Plus now. So it's Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus. I think the last time, yeah, this morning when I checked, I had 22,000 followers. I have great dialogues there. I talk about open source software. I talk about, I post about one or two humorous things every day that I'm finding as I walk through my minions of blogs. Minions, use minions again. There we go. got to keep using that word. That's a great word. Minion droppings, I think was that's the takeaway word for today's show. Minion
droppings. Minion droppings.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then I also talk about, of course, my improved health through my ketogenic diet. And I post a lot of things that are debunking conventional wisdom related to that. And I get some interesting dialogues from the people that are more conventional wisdom designed, or they think that what I'm talking about is bunk, which is perfectly fine. I love that kind of dialogue. As for upcoming appearances, I will be in New York City next week. I have a meetup scheduled on both the 27th and the 28th in the evening, starting around 6 or 7 o'clock. On the 27th, I'll be in Midtown at The Junction, which sounds like a really interesting place. They have this incredible appetizer that I don't remember the name of, except it had bacon, and that was the important thing, so the bacon appetizer. And the 28th, I'll be back at a place that I used to go to all the time while I was working in New York for various Wall Street firms, and that would be the Ginger Man. Again, a very popular place there. And again, follow my tweets or follow my Google Plus, and you'll see the information about those. I'll also be at Dragon Con that weekend. This will be my 12th year as a guest at Dragon Con. I'm actually going to be I'm speaking actually on two tracks, speaking on the podcasting track for the first time and also on the EFF tracks. I'll be sitting next to Tom Merritt. In fact, we'll be talking about the art of the interview on the podcasting track. That was a lot of fun actually being on TNT. God, was that last week? Or was the week before? It all blurs together. My entire life blurs together. Anyway, I was on TNT and had a great time doing that. Also just one more thing to plug. If you're in the LA area, as many of you are actually, I'm going to be on September 5th. At the Demand Media, I'll be doing the same presentation I did at OSCON. I call this the talk Half My Life with Pearl. Since Pearl's been around for 25 years and I've been around for 51 years, I've basically been with Pearl since the beginning, and I've talked about the influences between how Pearl's affected me and how I've affected Pearl and the Pearl community. So it went over really well at OSCON. I got some really good reviews on it. And so I'm actually doing a slightly longer version. I only had 40 minutes. I'm doing a longer version at Demand Media. That's on September 5th. So if you go to the Los Angeles Pearlmongers website, or you go to UUASC-LA, you can just Google for that. It's actually a co-produced program for that. Enough plugging. Gareth, what do you got to plug?
I'll plug Scale again. My usual plug. My usual plug. Scale will be happening again February 2014. Website, www.socallinuxexpo.org. I know I said this last time, but hopefully the call for papers will be out soon. Hopefully our website for 12X will be up soon, which will have the 12X call for papers. So we'll likely have, I would imagine, I would be surprised if we didn't have a Salt Stack Day again next year, as well as a Chef Day, a Puppet Day, and DevOps, and like all our usual suspects of Friday events. Exhibitors, speakers. So
cool.
If you're in the LA area, definitely come out for it.
Yeah, definitely. I highly recommend it. The few that I've actually been able to attend have been a lot of fun, a lot of networking, a lot of people you don't normally see as speakers too, because you really encourage people to kind of, break their chops, not break their chops. What's it? Learn their chops. I am just not doing good on idioms today. Anyway, I would say, no, I'm not going to go there. Okay, anyway, but actually try it out. So it's It's I like the variety. The speakers I see all the time, but I like also there's a lot of speakers I've never seen before, and they're willing to get up there because it's a very friendly environment, a very comfortable environment to start.
Yep. No, we've had a lot of people who where Scale has been their first time speaking, and they've gone on to be very successful speakers at many other events. So that's one of the things that we're kind of proud about is giving people the opportunity to get a start in speaking at conferences.
Very good. And Gareth, thank you once again for being my co-host.
Thanks for having me.
It's been very cool. I'm glad you volunteered yourself a few weeks back so that we could start this this new relationship, a new way of chatting with each other. Very cool. All right, and we'll see. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Oh, I guess. Oh, okay, I thought you were saying something. Anyway, now let's see if we can get this show out of the way here. Let's see. We'll see you, as I typically say towards the end, sometimes incorrectly. We'll see you all again next time on Floss Weekly.